Order.
After the Prime Minister, John Key, opposition leader Andrew Little, and assorted ministers and MPs flocked to stand beside Richie McCaw and mingle with the newly minted All Blacks Rugby World Cup squad in the Beehive on Sunday night, the House of Representatives next door remained deserted all week, as Mr. Key's National-led minority government again failed to take advantage of an adjournment to put any of Parliament's select committees to work. So, with nothing to report, we'll be taking a look at the most accessible part of the parliamentary week, question time, with which the House begins its normal sitting day at 2 p.m. Comprising a dozen questions for ministers, allotted and ordered according to a formula based on each party's numbers in the chamber, they are the opposition's chief tool in their task of opening up the government of the day to public scrutiny. That's the theory, which, as the current Speaker, National's David Carter, observed recently, is itself open to debate.
This is question time. The principal purpose is to hold the government to account, but inevitably there will be political debate around questions and answers. That's happened for as long as I've been in this House.
Mr. Carter has been in the House for just over 21 years, coming in August 1994 to fill the vacancy in the Selwyn electorate created by the resignation of National's Finance Minister Ruth Richardson. He's held ministerial portfolios since 1998, most recently as the Minister for Primary Industries in the second term of this national administration. Elected Speaker in January 2013, he took over the chair after being a minister in government answering questions, in contrast to his predecessor Lockwood Smith, who came off 9 years on the opposition benches asking them. This could explain a difference in their approach to interpretation of the basic rule, Standing Order 386, which stipulates that an answer that seeks to address the question asked must be given if it can be given consistently with the public interest. The key words there are seek, answer and address. And although it's a rough measure, Lockwood Smith put more emphasis on seek to answer, while David Carter is more likely to accept seek to address. His interpretation is constantly put to the test as opposition MPs try to hold to account government ministers who, whatever their party, are naturally averse to it. In this Parliament, that's best illustrated by the weekly tussles between Labour's Deputy Leader, Annette King, and the Minister of Health, Jonathan Coleman. For instance, on the Thursday before the adjournment, Mrs. King put this question to the Minister.
Speaker, my question's to the Minister of Health. If government health expenditure has not kept up with all inflationary pressures, as he admitted on the 29th of July, what impact has this shortfall had on patients?
That elicited this answer from Jonathan Coleman.
Mr. Speaker, the central premise of the member's question is wrong. Inflation is currently 0.3%. Cost pressure funding for 2015-16 for health is around 0.6%. Extra investment of over $4 billion under this government is delivering free GP visits for under 13s, 50,000 more operations, 60,000 more first specialist assessments, and 5,500 more doctors and nurses. It's only a national government that can both handle the country's finances and deliver more services.
Mrs. King, Labour's health minister for 6 years to 2005, then tried to expose flaws in that answer with supplementary questions, all of which got nowhere against Jonathan Coleman's determination to hold her to account.
No, Mr. Speaker, that's totally incorrect. The member's having flashbacks to her own tenure. What she knows is that 95% of patients are in and out of our EDs within 6 hours. The service is much, much better than it was a whole decade ago, back when Mrs. King was the minister. And I'm very pleased to see that Mrs. King's views on the health system have changed substantially over time, because back in 2002, she said, New Zealand's not rich enough to have the kind of health system found in Australia. This is all scaremongering and rumour. The member gives no details. The only facts we know is she doubled the budget, delivered 7,500 fewer appointments and 2,000 fewer operations. As I said in the Dawn Post in September 2005, how can a minister spend so much money yet make the system worse? And that was Annette King. No record to stand on, I'm afraid.
The Honourable Dr. Jonathan Coleman.
Mr. Speaker, the only fact in all this is that Mrs. King doubled the budget twice and actually delivered 7,500 fewer appointments, 2,000 fewer operations. All the rest is Mrs. King making it up. You'll notice Mrs. King gives no names, no dates, no hospital. I don't think you could possibly believe that. I think it's probably fiction.
Health Minister Jonathan Coleman turning the tables on his Labor shadow, Annette King, trying to hold her to account for her record in his job more than 10 years ago. Another source of aggravation for the opposition in recent weeks has involved their desire to question the Prime Minister. Rhys Lyon reports.
2 weeks back, on the 19th of August, opposition leader Andrew Little sought to ask the Prime Minister if he stood by his statement that he'd hate to see New Zealanders as tenants in their own country, and if so, how many applications by overseas investors to buy land were declined under the Overseas Investment Act 2005 between January 2012 and June 2015. But that question had been transferred from the Prime Minister to an Associate Minister of Finance, something Mr. Little took up with the Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, this question was originally set down for the Prime Minister, and I therefore seek leave of the House to have the question transferred back to the Prime Minister.
The Speaker ruled that the government was entitled to transfer questions around its ministers.
I refer the member to Speaker's ruling 1695. I'm not prepared to put the leave. It is a prerogative of the government to decide where the leave has gone, where the question's gone to. They've made that decision. If the member wants to continue asking it, as it's on the order paper, he can do so.
That ruling says that the matter of transfer is over to the government, and the Speaker will not put leave to transfer the question back because the government has already made its decision. But opposition whip Chris Hipkins said he had anticipated the Speaker's stance.
And went back and reviewed all of the Hansard from the last term of Parliament where the then Leader of the Opposition, John Key, was putting down questions to the then Prime Minister, Helen Clark, and could find no examples where the Prime Minister transferred a question from the Leader of the Opposition. And therefore, I ask that the House give consideration to whether that ruling that you referred to should actually apply in this circumstance, because there has to be an ability for the opposition to question the Prime Minister on a range of issues. The Prime Minister ultimately is responsible for all issues around the government's policy.
The Speaker suggested that the question could be rephrased.
When I look at the wording of this particular question, it is very much about the workings of the Overseas Investment Office, and therefore I see no difficulty at all with the fact that it's been transferred. I don't think in any way it will lessen the quality of the answer. The answer, therefore, lies in the future if the member, the Leader of the Opposition, wants to target a question to the Prime Minister, then he needs to change the wording and, in this case, not refer so much to the portfolio of Overseas Investment Office.
After a series of further points of order from both sides of the House, the Speaker gave Andrew Little an ultimatum.
If the Leader of the Opposition wants to proceed with the question, he can do so. If he does not want to proceed with the question, then we'll move immediately to question number four. It's in the hands of the Leader of the Opposition.
Raising his hands in surrender, Mr. Little signalled he'd not be asking the question. The following week, the transfer of questions was raised again, this time by Labor's Shadow Leader of the House, Grant Robertson.
Here's two parts to the point of order I'm raising. This question was set down to the Prime Minister and asked him to whether he stood by a statement. That statement was made in this House. There's no dispute that the statement was made. It was in Hansard.
Order, can I just have the point of order?
The point of order, Mr. Speaker, is that I believe the transfer of the question undermines the integrity of question time. I do not understand how the opposition can hold the Prime Minister to account when direct quotes that he has given in this House are transferred. If you will indulge me, Mr. Speaker, the second part of my point of order is that the option that then gives the opposition is to simply ask the Prime Minister, does he stand by all his statements? That is a ridiculous situation because that question wouldn't be transferred. We then lose valuable supplementary questions and the opportunity is opened up for the Minister answering to say they don't have the material available to them. I think this kind of transfer undermines the integrity of question time.
However, the Speaker, David Carter, did not sympathise with Mr. Robertson's view.
I don't agree with the member. If I felt for 1 minute that it did, in transferring, undermine the integrity of question time and effectively it was an anathema to the justice of the question time system, then I would not allow the transfer. I think there are, in regards to the second point made by Grant Robertson, there are ways that this question could have been worded in such a way that it couldn't have been transferred, and that includes ways that are more general than just does the Prime Minister stand by a statement. I suggest that if he wants advice on the wording of that, he takes some advice from perhaps the clerk, the office of the clerk, to help him in further wording questions so that it is more difficult for the transfer to occur. But in this case, the transfer is the right of the government, provided it doesn't in any way mean the shifting of responsibility doesn't get a fair chance to answer. The question, in essence, is around KiwiSaver. That responsibility is in the hands of the Minister of Finance, and I think the question can proceed if the member wishes to continue.
Mr. Robertson then sought some clarification from the Speaker.
How is it not anathema to...
Order. Now the member is questioning a ruling I've just given. That is unacceptable. I've made a ruling. The member can shake his head and say that he doesn't agree with it. I think there's frequent opportunities for members to disagree with rulings that they make, that I make in this House, but at the end of the day, they must accept them.
With that, Mr. Robertson tried another tack.
A fresh point of order, yes. Grant Robertson.
Mr. Speaker, I seek leave of the House for this question to be transferred back to the Prime Minister.
Order. I invite the member to look at Speaker's ruling 1695. I'm not putting that leave.
The Speaker, David Carter.
There are times when ministers do want to be held to account, and they arrange for their own backbenchers to ask them questions, called patsies. Here, for instance, is a question for the Minister for Small Business, Craig Foss, from the National Member for Taranaki King Country, Barbara Couriger.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister for Small Business and asks, how are small businesses benefiting from the Better for Business Result 9 program?
Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Craig Foss.
Mr. Speaker, this week the government introduced the New Zealand Business Number Bill, a key part of the Better for Business Result 9 program.
But that wasn't all.
To the Minister, how else are small and medium businesses benefiting from Better for Business Results 9 program?
Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Craig Foss.
Through the website business.gov.nz, small and medium businesses are able to access government-related advice.
What other tools are available through business.govt.nz to support small and medium businesses?
Honourable Craig Foss.
Mr. Speaker, through business.gov.nz, small and medium businesses can... A. Would you like me to start again, Mr. Speaker?
No, I certainly would not like you to start again. I'd be very grateful if you'd finish the answer quickly.
Mr. Speaker... Small and medium businesses are benefiting.
But patsy questions have now spread to the opposition benches, with MPs taking the advantage of the right to ask questions of other members who chair committees or sponsor members' bills in order to draw attention to their own bills once they're on the order paper. On Tuesday, for instance, there were questions for Labour's Sue Moroney about her paid parental leave bill from her caucus colleague, Poto Williams.
Why did she draft the Parental Leave and Employment Protection 6 months Paid Leave and Work Contact Hours Amendment Bill?
Sue Moroney.
Speaker, I drafted the bill because of the overwhelming research that shows the important brain development and other milestones that occur in the first 6 months of life. The evidence shows that if we're prepared to invest in supporting bonding between parent and baby and supporting breastfeeding to 6 months, then as a country we will save more money on funding services needed for bad outcomes.
Supplementary question, Porto Williams.
What parliamentary support is she expecting to receive for her parental leave and employment protection, 6 months paid leave and work contact hours amendment?
I don't see that question being out of order. It can be answered. Sue Moroney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill has the full backing of my Labor colleagues. I have also been informed of valuable support from the Green Party, from New Zealand First,
order,
and from
just
the Māori Party.
The question. Question number two, Ainsley's Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the member in charge of the Parental Leave and Employment Protection 6 months Paid Leave and Worked Contact Hours Amendment Bill. What indication of support has she received for putting forward the Parental Leave and Employment Protection 6 months Paid Leave and Work Contact Hours Amendment Bill?
Moroney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In another stroke of luck...
Order,
the bill
just
was drawn...
answer the question.
Thank you. The bill was drawn from the ballot the week prior to World Breastfeeding Week and immediately drew the support of the New Zealand Breastfeeding Authority, the New Zealand Education Institute and Plunkett. They have been joined by 24 other community organisations, collectively known as 26 for Babies. This coalition involves organisations as diverse as Maternity Services, Consumer
Order.
Council,
Order.
Family First.
Order. Supplementary question, Ian Lees-Galloway.
To the member, what has changed since she last had a bill before Parliament proposing 6 months paid parental leave for families and their babies?
Very briefly, Sue Moroney.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. This bill now just requires an additional 8 weeks paid leave as opposed to the 12 weeks with my previous bill. It has been debated during more favourable economic times, and importantly, since it was defeated on a 60-60 vote, National lost the Northland by-election.
Order, order. Member will resume her seat.
And that elicited this warning from the Speaker, David Carter.
That in my mind, when we're seeing a number of times for these questions to be asked, which are simply a means of promoting a member's bill, I think we are in danger of standing orders reconsidering the value of such questions.
Speaker David Carter, who was back in the chair on Tuesday when the House returned from its week's adjournment, and, as Rhys Lyon reports, Labour's deputy leader Annette King resumed her battle with her national successor as Health Minister.
Annette King's scrutiny of Health Minister Jonathan Coleman began with this question on Tuesday.
Does he stand by his statement on the 29th of July that core Crown health expenditure covers, quote, most but not all inflationary pressures, end quote, and what impact has this shortfall had on patients?
The Honourable Dr. Jonathan Coleman.
Mr Speaker, I stand by my comments in the context that they are made. Inflation is at 0.4%, meaning that the 0.6% contribution for inflationary pressure is actually above the rate of inflation. In terms of impact on patients, this government is delivering 50,000 more operations, 60,000 more surgical appointments, faster cancer care, 5,500 more doctors and nurses, and free GP visits and prescriptions for 750,000 children. Only a national government can both handle the country's finances and deliver more services.
Order. Supplementary question,
thank
the
you,
Honourable
Mr Speaker.
Annette
if
King.
There is sufficient funding, why was Claire Davies, a 24-year-old who spent 1.5 years in pain waiting for an operation, told by her orthopaedic surgeon 2 months ago, quote, unfortunately, you are being adversely affected by funding limitations throughout the New Zealand health system?
The Honourable Dr. Jonathan Coleman.
Canterbury District Health Board has admitted on the news on Sunday night that statement made by that surgeon was incorrect and should never have been sent to that patient, and that patient will be getting her operation as she should have been in the first place.
Order. Order.
Point of order, Mr Speaker.
Point of order, the Honourable Annie.
Mr Speaker, I seek leave to table the letter to Claire Davies, dated the 3rd of July 2015, from her orthopaedic surgeon, saying funding
order.
Limitations.
Order. We don't need a description of it. Leave is sought to table that particular letter. Is there any objection? There is none. It can be
supplementary
tabled.
Supplementary question, Mr Speaker.
Supplementary question, the
Did
Honourable Annie.
Did anyone in his office contact the orthopaedic surgeon who wrote the letter to Claire Davies, or did his office speak to the media about the surgeon in an attempt to warn the media off reporting this appalling story?
The Honourable Dr. Jonathan Coleman, either of those two supplementary questions?
No.
He'll be back. Order.
Supplementary question,
supplementary
Mr.
Supplementary question, Honourable Annette King.
Are 20 DHBs wrong when they report 160,000 people have been sent back to their GP without a specialist appointment, even though the data has been collected using the new Ministry of Health National Patient Flow data set, which he says will next year show the level of real unmet need?
The Honourable Dr. Jonathan Coleman.
Mr Speaker, as the member well knows, always patients have been sent back from their GP. They were when Labor were in government, and actually no government's ever been able to supply all the operations that every person needs. But we are the first government to ever build a complete picture of that. The member knows, actually, that that picture is not yet complete and the data will be available later next year. All we do know for a fact is we are doing more. So 60,000 more surgical appointments, 50,000 more operations and 50,000 more medical appointments. So the only answer to unmet need is to do more. We're doing more. The Labor people did less.
Order. Order.
Tuesday also saw questions to the government from Labor's finance spokesman, Grant Robertson.
My question is to the Minister of Finance. When did Treasury first advise him that economic conditions were starting to mirror the downside scenario in his 2015 budget?
The Honourable Bill English.
Mr. Speaker, Treasury have not specifically advised me of that. Treasury have advised me that since Budget 2015, dairy prices have fallen more than they expected, broadly in line with their alternative scenario. Now, they've also advised that the downside scenario in Budget 15 does not take account of other offsetting factors. For example, that both exchange rate and interest rates are lower than assumed in the alternative scenario. These factors, of course, support all export-orientated businesses, not just those in the dairy sector.
Supplementary question, Grant Robertson.
Will the lower-than-expected exchange rate offset the negative impacts of other weak indicators that have been described by economists as portraying a very sluggish economy?
The Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr. Speaker, yes, eventually it will offset some of those. In fact, it's probably offsetting some of them now. But the exchange rate effects take some time to show through. But one is only to talk to businesses that were profitable at 88 cents exchange rate against the US dollar to find them somewhat enthusiastic about their profitability at 63 cents.
Supplementary question.
Grant Robertson.
Did Treasury advise him that unemployment is likely to rise above 6% in coming quarters, despite the worst case scenario in the budget being 5.5%?
The Honourable Bill English.
Mr. Speaker, I wouldn't want to repeat exactly, to misrepresent Treasury in any way, but they have certainly indicated that unemployment's likely to be sticky around the 6% mark.
Supplementary question, Mr. Speaker.
Supplementary question, Grant Robertson.
So, therefore, Treasury are telling him that there will be 16,000 more unemployed people, making 151,000 unemployed people after that forecast comes to fruition. And how can he see that as a successful economy?
The Honourable Bill English.
Mr. Speaker, no, Treasury haven't actually said that. What they've indicated is that the quite strong rate of job growth is likely to slow down. The interesting thing about the New Zealand market is that while there has been strong creation of jobs, there's been large numbers of people showing up to that market, including a net inflow from Australia for the first time in 25 years. Now, we'll get an update from the Reserve Bank this week with their forecasts, and then Treasury before Christmas on their forecasts about how migration, job creation and unemployment are going to interact.
Supplementary question, Grant Robertson.
Has the economy reached stall speed, as the ANZ Business Confidence Survey indicated? And if so, does he intend to alter anything about his approach to managing the economy?
The Honourable Bill English, either of those two supplementary questions.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not quite sure what the ANZ means by stall speed. I think they mean it's slowed down, and you don't have to be an economist to figure that out.
Meanwhile, earlier in question time, the Syrian refugee crisis in Europe was the subject of questions to Immigration Minister Michael Woodhouse from Greens co-leader James Shaw.
Does he stand by his statement to this House in June of this year that, quote, the government still has an open mind on that quota number?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Mr. Speaker, yes. Supplementary.
A supplementary question, James Shaw.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If his government does have an open mind, why did they vote down the Green Party's bill and stop public consultation on the refugee quota at Select Committee?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Well, I'm not aware that there's been any shutting down of consultation at Select Committee. And
order. Point of order, the Honourable General. Yeah,
the Minister has no responsibility for that. I'd ask you to reflect very carefully on it, because it was the Parliament that actually denied the Green Party's bill, not the Minister.
No. There is an issue, I think, about the second part of the question being a decision on the Select Committee. I didn't quite catch the question, but I'm ruling that the question's in order. It's quite capable for the member to answer. Does the member wish to have the question repeated? Would James Shaw please repeat the question for the balance, for the benefit of the Minister?
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Point of order, James Shaw.
I noticed that the Minister did actually object himself
Order. That's not. I appreciate the point the member's making, but that's not going to help the order of the House. The supplementary question, I will rule in order. I'll allow the member now to ask it again, and we'll allow the minister then to answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Supplementary question, James Shaw.
If his government has such an open mind, why did he vote down the Green Party's bill and stop public consultation on the refugee quota at Select Committee?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Well, Mr Speaker, while I have no responsibility for either of those things, I am aware that the Foreign Affairs Select Committee is hearing four submissions on that very issue this week.
Supplementary question, James Shaw.
How can New Zealanders trust the national government to increase the quota when John Key has already said, in relation to the existing 750 cap, that, quote, we believe that that's the right number for us, end quote?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Well, Mr Speaker, the public can trust the government to redouble its efforts to ensure that the quota refugees that we do take are well settled. The data I have seen is that there are, despite very good examples of strong settlement amongst the quota refugees, an unacceptably high number are not doing well after they settle here, and that is the government's focus.
Supplementary question, James Shaw.
Why should the public trust the National Party to increase the refugee quota in a meaningful long-term way when, as late as last week, they refused to even consider an emergency quota and in the past have lobbied to cut the number of refugees that New Zealand takes?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Mr Speaker, the member has something of a fixation on the quota and of the number 750. I remind the House that that is one part of the government's humanitarian response, including another 300 places in family reunion, the 250 or so convention refugees that are granted asylum every year, and the emergency places that have been announced this week, in addition to significant other humanitarian contributions, on top of the $15 million that the government had already provided to assist the Turkish government in supporting refugees on their border, another $4.5 million was announced this week. And I think that is a very, very good contribution above the 750.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, James Shaw.
So does he believe that New Zealand is doing its fair share, given that since National was elected in 2008, we have slipped from 83rd in the world to 90th in the world per capita for taking on refugees?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Well, Mr Speaker, the member is fixated on the quota, so I'll give him the numbers on quota. Of the 193 UN countries, only 22 of them take quota refugees. New Zealand ranks about 6th or 7th on that list, and I think we can be very, very proud of that record.
Entry.
Order. Order. James Shaw, supplementary question.
So does he believe that New Zealand is doing its fair share when we haven't increased our quota since 1987?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Mr Speaker, for the reasons that I outlined two supplementary questions ago, yes.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, James Shaw.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. So given that the Minister's office was already advised on increasing the quota when it was last reviewed in 2013... and there has not been an increase for the last 3 years, why does the government need to do another review?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Well, Mr Speaker, because in the absence of a review, nothing would change. We are going to review that quota next year, as we've set out, and that's what the government will do.
And the refugee crisis was also the subject of this announcement from the Speaker, David Carter, at the end of question time on Tuesday.
I have received letters from James Shaw and Andrew Little seeking to debate under Standing Order 389 the announcement of a decision to accept an additional 600 Syrian refugees. This is a particular case of recent occurrence involving ministerial responsibility. The business of the House should not be set aside just because an announcement has been made, even though it may be important. There must be such an element of urgency that the matter must take precedence over other business. My perception is that there has been general support for the accepting of additional refugees. There has been and will continue to be discussion about whether the numbers of refugees accepted is sufficient. I am not persuaded that the debating that issue warrants the setting aside of the business of the House. The application is therefore declined.
The Speaker, David Carter.
That report from Rhys Lyon. More details and a podcast of this program on our website, parliamenttoday.co.nz. I'm Tom Frewen, and this program was brought to you with funding from Parliament.